Hey there, be sure to take a minute to check out the links that are posted in the episode notes.
What's up? You are now listening to Americanized, a storytelling podcast where you'll hear from eclectic first and second generation Americans share their stories and real life experiences as children of immigrants.
Today's guest is a game changer for millennials tired of running on a never-ending financial treadmill. Her name is Annie Margarita Yang, and not only is she a money-saving guru with over a million YouTube views, but she's also written Amazon bestsellers like The 5-Day Job Search and 1001 Ways to Save Money. Annie is a millennial who understands how crazy the job market and keeping a positive bank account status is right now. She gets it. The delayed dreams, the struggles, and the hunger for escape. That's why I'm excited to have her share some of the systems she's created to make financial freedom feel more like an achievable goal than an unrealistic dream. So, if you're a millennial overwhelmed by your student loan debt, finding a better job, or how you'll pay all your bills, Annie's latest book has the tips you need. And if you're Gen Z and want to avoid crushing debt in the first place, you don't want to miss this. Let's get into it. Thank you for joining the show, Annie. How are you today?
I'm great, Rosalind. Thanks for having me on today. I'm really glad to be here.
Of course. Okay, so can you share a little bit about your upbringing and the household dynamic that you come from?
Well, I come from working class immigrant parents. My parents are actually originally from China, and they came to the United States with $400 in the 1990s. Mm-hmm. And I was raised in Brooklyn, New York. We didn't have a lot of money growing up. My dad worked for the MTA, and then my mom had a bunch of like small businesses. So you could think like, you know, nail salon, ice cream shop, things like that, Chinese takeout restaurant while I was growing up. We didn't have a lot of money growing up. I just remember the fact that like we never ate out. Eating out was like reserved for specifically holidays and birthdays, very special occasions. Other than that, it was always eat at home. So I just remember being really embarrassed when I was 16 years old. I had a boyfriend who took me to Cold Stone Creamery and I didn't know how to order ice cream.
Oh, wow.
I didn't understand. What does it mean you order a cup, a scoop, or a cone? I didn't really understand because we never did that when I was a kid. And then later on, when it was time to go to college, I didn't go. Because I didn't want to take on any student loan debt. I saw a lot of people back in 2012, 2013. They were just graduating college and they came out with like $25,000 in student loan debt. And half of them were unemployed or underemployed. And I was like, I don't want to be in those shoes. And seeing that like my parents didn't have a lot of money, I was like, I don't want to take on student loan debt just to come back after college and boomerang back home and live with them. So I didn't go straight to college. And that was basically my upbringing in a nutshell.
Okay, interesting. So I think two questions are coming out of that. Did you ever participate in your family's small businesses? Were you ever a part of that? Or were you more focused on your education and school and academics?
Oh yeah, K-12 was definitely only school. We weren't expected to help out around the house. That's why I never learned to cook before I was 18 years old. In the Asian family dynamic, they expect you, like your job is just to focus on school. Like you shouldn't be focusing on anything else. Like I desperately wanted a part-time job and I didn't even know how to get one. Like because in my mom's head, it's like, oh, your focus shouldn't be on working. That's something you do after you're done with school. And I think a lot of Asian parents have the same mentality, or at least like from that generation that came to the United States.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. When you were saying that, I just pictured my dad because he's the same way. I remember in high school, I wanted a part-time job and he was like, you don't need a part-time job. Just focus on school. You'll work after you go to college and get your own career and make your own money. Or he would think that he could provide me with the money that I would get from working in high school. And a lot of kids were working, and I thought that was like the normal thing to do, earn your own money.
and save it up for college, but my dad, his thinking was a little bit different.
Yeah, that's right. Because actually, when I lived in Texas for a year and I was a substitute teacher, I remember like yelling at one of the kids. I was like, you guys don't know how to manage your money or something like that. And it actually turns out like one of the kids was working like, I don't know, 20 hours a week while going to high school. I was like, what?
Wow.
Yeah. It was actually very common for the kids in that school when I was substituting to have a part-time job while going to high school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's crazy that you kind of start that trajectory, that process so early on, and then you just kind of continue on until retirement. You're just working, and balancing work and school and life.
I think it's good. They learn responsibility, I think. A lot of them, I'm from New York, so you can't drive till you're 18. And besides that, you don't want to drive because public transport is like everywhere, right? So that's like normal for New York. But when I was in Texas, it was like normal for a 16-year-old to get a car and drive. So you expect the kid to pay for gas and insurance at the very least if they're going to drive themselves to school, and wherever they want to go after school, then they should get a job. I think maybe that's the mentality there. Yeah.
That should be more responsible and independent. Were you ever pushed or pressured to go to college?
No, actually, not by my parents. I was pushed and pressured by my guidance counselor at school. She's Indian. She was an Indian in her 30s. And when I told her that I wasn't going to go straight to college, she freaked out. And I had to have a meeting with her every week. And she basically told me, if I don't go straight to college, I will always be a failure for the rest of my life. Wow. And one day she had this special meeting. She called in my parents to school without telling me for this special meeting. And then she invited the head of the guidance counseling department as well to this meeting. And then took me out of physics class to go. And she told my mom, she was like, well, your daughter is not going to college. Are you aware of this? And my parents were not aware at all at the time.
Oh, they weren't aware.
Yeah, they were not aware. Yes. And my mom just looked at my dad and she was just like, is this what it takes to be successful in the United States? I'm not really sure. Is what this guidance counselor is saying is true? She didn't really have much to say. And then, so then my guidance counselor looks at my dad and goes, well, what do you think of Annie's decision? And then my dad was simply like, we're not responsible for her decisions after she turns 18. She needs to suffer the consequences of her own decision making. Because she's an adult. Yes.
Yeah, suffer. Strong word. That's a big meeting. Wow.
Yes.
Interesting. Wow. That must be like a big perspective taking for everybody in that room. But that didn't even change your mind. You're still determined to not be loaded with student loans and drugs.
I had a little doubt. Actually, after that meeting, I had a little doubt. I was like, you know, if adults really are the ones who know how the real world works. And this guidance counselor was hammering into me every week, I'm an adult. I know how the real world works, Annie. And this is how it works in the real world and how you be successful and how you're a failure, right? And so I was thinking about it. I was like, well, I'm not an adult yet. I was like, what, 17? Maybe she does know how the real world works. And maybe I should listen to her advice. But in the end, I decided not to listen to her advice. And I'm really glad because, like, you know, when I look back today at the same people I graduated high school with, they're burdened with student loan debt. Like, they were told, if you go to a really prestigious university, you know, everything will always work out for you after you're done. This will give you a leg up in the job market and all those sorts of stuff. I had, like, friends who went to NYU. They went to Fordham. So, like, maybe I think the friends who... No, not even. I had friends who went to Cornell, right? I had a friend who went to Cornell. He came out and he just said, I'm just going to get a job working in the Marines. You don't need a college degree to go into the Marines, right? Then I had another friend who finished Cornell. She came out and she was just like, oh, I can't get anything with this degree, even though she graduated from Cornell. She's like, now I need a master's degree. So she borrowed $100,000 to get a master's degree. Now she's paying that off. You know, the friends who came from NYU, went to NYU, one of them, she ended up working as like I don't know, a guidance counseling assistant or something, like something in the administrative role in a high school. So you get, that doesn't pay very well. That's about 60 grand with what she borrowed from NYU. And then the last one, I don't know what she does. She doesn't post what she does online, but I know she graduated from NYU and she has student loan debt. Out of all of the people I went to school with that were my close friends, I'm the most financially successful because I didn't take on any student loan debt.
Isn't that amazing that you're the one who didn't go to college immediately after high school and avoided the debt, and they went to these big name universities, and was it worth it? Is like the question I guess we're searching. There are pros and cons, but you wrote a book about how you can avoid all of this, the 5-day job search. What is the story behind you landing accounting jobs 3 times in a row, each time within 5 days? How does that happen? How did you get there?
So basically, I moved to Boston. I was living in Texas. I was working a whole string of minimum wage jobs. I was working at Domino's Pizza. And my mindset was always just like, if only somebody would finally just give me an opportunity to prove myself, why won't anyone just, you know, open the door, just open the door for me, and I will take full advantage. I won't disappoint. But where I was in Texas, there wasn't a lot of those kinds of jobs. It was just like fast food nation over there. So when I moved to Boston, I was like, you know, I'm in a new city. Nobody knows me. There's an abundance of jobs because this is a bigger city. It's like almost what I felt like when I moved here. I was like, literally, if you're alive and breathing and you have a pulse, somebody is going to give you a job. That's how I felt about it. So I was just like, okay, if I'm willing to just hustle and put in the applications, maybe I can get something. I don't have an accounting degree, but because I worked for minimum wage for about 5 years at that point, earning minimum wage, and I was so good at managing our household finances on minimum wage, I managed to save about 25 to 50% of my income since my first job on minimum wage. If I can do this for myself, live on a budget, keep track of every penny, like, isn't this the kind of quality someone's looking for in an accountant for their business? And so I thought, okay, maybe I can get an accounting job, because apparently I was told that I was unqualified for customer service. Somebody told me that I didn't have the phone skills necessary to do customer service. So I was like, okay.
That's what you've been doing.
Yeah, I've been answering phones at Domino's Pizza, but somebody told me that I wasn't qualified for that. So I was just like, okay, maybe I can do accounting instead. Thank God she turned me down, because at that point, then I was like, okay, I'll look for accounting. And I started applying to 50 accounting jobs a day. And I started getting interviews. And some of these people, they didn't care about the lack of degree. They just, what they liked was my attitude. They liked this hustle. There was this one guy, he said, I really like your spunk. That's what I like. I don't see this in other applicants. So I was basically hired for attitude. You see, the things on the job you can learn. That's trainable, but you cannot train attitude. So that's one of the aspects on why I got a job in 5 days.
50 applications a day. That has to be exhausting.
Actually, it's not. I tell people, if you think about this, the average job seeker takes about 6 months to land a job offer. Look it up. That's a statistic, right? But if you go on Reddit, where people complain all the time about their job search, and start reading the forums, some people actually respond to the original poster asking, well, how many jobs a day do you apply to? Oh, I apply to so many. Really? How many did you apply to? And then they start answering, well, I apply to like 5 a day. I apply to so many. So you average that out like 5 times, you know, 6 months. And that's like about 300 to 350 jobs, right? And so I'm basically advocating for people to do the same amount of work that they would have spent over a 6 month period, right? It's the same amount of jobs you're applying to, but just shorten that. Instead of doing it in 6 months, do it in 7 days, right? Why don't you front load all the work? Same amount of work. You're just changing how much time you spend on it.
That's true. It's definitely possible. I mean, you did it. It sounds like a lot though. It just sounds like a lot. But if you think about how many hours in a day and how many hours in a week, and once you get your resume done, it's like a lot of just hitting submit, 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 and
yeah,
writing the same thing. So it's I guess it's not as much work as it sounds.
It's not. Yeah, you just do one highly targeted resume that's specific for the title you're going after. And then you look for all the jobs that have that specific title. And you just hit apply, 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 apply. Like, just go down and apply. My friend was asking, can we just like build an AI that can click it for you? Maybe. Yeah.
Right. That would be helpful. You made this decision to do minimum wage jobs. And then you finally applied for these accounting jobs because you were qualified, essentially. What was your parents' reaction to your success and doing things a non-conventional way?
It's weird, right? Because prior to doing that, they would tell me I'm a failure. So they would start comparing me to my friends from high school and go like, well, look at Diane. She graduated from Cornell and she's now a physician assistant. What are you doing? Or something, right. You know? Like this, look at what stuff. Yeah, look at what this mom's, you know, her friend who's a mom said about the son, right? Like, look at what they've done. And then I remember specifically, there's this, her friend is Wendy, right? So she goes like, look, Auntie Wendy's son works on Wall Street. He makes over six figures income and he just bought a condo in Manhattan. Why aren't you successful? And then I had to ask, I was like, Mom, I'm 21 years old. How old is Wendy's son? And she goes like, Wendy's son is 30. And then I said, You can't compare me at 21 to Wendy's son at 30. I mean, like,
huge age gap. Yeah.
Things take time in career to earn money.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, it's my gosh.
The surface level stuff. The details are not looked at.
It's right.
The automatic comparison. Because you look like you're not doing what they're doing. So it looks like you're failing when in reality, you made it out on top. You're successful.
Yeah, and then I remember when I was just starting to be successful. It was just like, because you don't like just become successful out of nowhere, right? Like, it's just like, I feel like it's like, it takes time. It's like peeling back the layers of the onion, right? And so when I was just starting to be successful, so when my YouTube video went viral, and then I got like, got into the YouTube partnership program. So I started earning money from the advertising revenue. When I first got that, the monthly ad revenue I got from YouTube was like $225 a month, right? And so I was like so excited. I was telling my mom like, Mom, look, you know, I make these YouTube videos. It's my passion. It's something I'm happy to do. And I get paid for it. And I was so happy. Because you know what? Like for a long time, I was earning minimum wage. I was earning like $10 an hour. And how many hours does it take? That's like 3 days worth of work at a minimum wage job for me to earn that much, right? But instead, I was earning that in a month from YouTube videos. And she was like, oh, $225, that's candy. that's peanut candy. Money. I was like, that's nothing. Like candy. That's yeah, that's nothing. Wow. You can only buy candy. Now though, they go tell everybody, we're so proud of Annie. Look at how well Annie's done. She's so successful. And even now, they will not tell me to my face that they're proud of me. They will tell it to other parents how proud they are of me.
Yeah. Oh man, how does that make you feel?
I've learned at this point, I've learned to not ever care about their opinion ever again. Because if I keep chasing for the opinion, I'll never be happy.
That's true.
Yeah.
I feel that's a trend with immigrant parents.
Yeah.
They won't. They are proud of you, but they will never let you know to your face.
Yes.
When thinking of immigrant communities and the first generation American community and other communities of color, I feel like, I don't know if you've been hearing this, but I feel like there's a lot of talk about generational wealth and breaking any generational financial curses. How does this, well, first, have you heard talk around that before?
I've heard the talk around it, but I don't believe in it.
Okay.
Like I don't believe that like you're cursed to not do well financially just because your family didn't do well financially. Like I personally believe in like, I believe people have the capacity to change their life. Like I'm literally like the believer of like the pull yourself up by your bootstraps kind of person. Like, and the American dream of like pursuing your happiness. I mean, that's I don't believe we're handed anything, but we have the ability, the opportunity to pursue our happiness. And if your happiness is earning money, then go and do it, right? Sure. What I really believe is, like, money doesn't care about the color of your skin. Mm-hmm. Money doesn't care what family you came from. Because why is it that there are people who came from money, but they lose it all, right?
Right.
I know somebody who's a trust fund baby. His great grandparents owned the department store that was similar to Sears. They it doesn't exist anymore, but it was like similar to Sears back then. So you know they had multi millions of dollars in their trust fund. But you know that gets split, right? That gets split between his grandfather's generation. Then it gets split in his parents' generation. And then it gets split in his generation. So, you know, as he's handed that money, it's three generations ago, but the chunk gets smaller with each generation, right? Yeah, and then you spend it as well. And he lives way beyond his income. I swear, at the rate he's going, the rate of his spending, there actually won't be money for the kids. The trust fund will be gone by the time his kids grow up and finish college and get married. Like, it won't be there anymore, right? But the kids don't know that. but then there's also people who come from nothing, right? And they build their way up and they become wealthy. Like, I have a client who told me that he's 83 years old and his grandfather actually lost all the wealth in 1929 in the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. And then by 1939, he made all the money back and more.
Whoa.
And became a millionaire again. So I think it's really more about your own work ethic when it comes to earning money. It's not about what family you came from. But money does care about if you follow the right actions, right? If you have the right mindset, you have the right actions, and you do all of that, then you have what it takes.
I like that a lot. I like that a lot because I hear generational curses for different things all the time, including money. And I think you're absolutely right about the mindset and just pursuing your own happiness and kind of not depending on what was before you, but paving your own path and deciding what you want for your future and not saying, oh, just because my parents were like this or my grandparents were like this, I'm going to be like this. I feel like that can be a little lazy.
Just yeah.
This is the way things are. There's no hope for me. So generational curses for financial or in general do not apply. You don't believe in that and it doesn't apply to you.
I don't believe in that. I used to believe in that. I used to think, I used to have a really like victim mentality. I used to think, oh, I can't. So I was saving money back then, but the earning money portion was the difficult part, right? I had no problem saving, but earning money was hard. And I remember the kind of thoughts that went through my head. I was reading a lot of like victim stories online and things like that. And I'm looking at myself, my own identity, surface level identity, right? Mm-hmm. The ascribed status, what they describe in sociology about like gender and sex is a identity, right? Race is an identity. Age, right? These are things you cannot change, right? Mm-hmm. You cannot change your this stuff. So I thought, okay, well, I'm a woman. So for women, there's a glass ceiling. What is the other one? I'm Chinese American, right? So for Asian Americans, there is a bamboo ceiling in terms of earning, right? If you've heard of that one. And then for millennials, oh, you know how hard it is for millennials to get ahead financially. We have it worse than the baby boomers. We've experienced, you know, all of this downturns and stuff like that. So like I had three things that I could point to be a victim. And finally, one day I was just like, you know what? I'm so sick of being in these victimized stories. I said to my husband, I'm never going to complain again. I told him, I'm going to work hard to see how far I can go. And if I'm successful, I'm going to say I'm successful in spite of that.
Mm.
And that if I'm successful in spite of that, the things that I could complain about, these victim-minded mentality, then maybe other people who are just like me, woman or Asian American or millennial, will look at me and go like, well, she did it. Why can't I?
Yeah, it's very inspiring and very hopeful too. Wealth and success doesn't have an image. Anybody can make it.
Mm-hmm.
So what is your message to the children of immigrants who are still trying to figure out their passion or their career plans, but either do or don't receive pressure from their parents?
Well, my message is you only have one life to live. You're not here to live your parents' life, right? Your parents, they guide you. They do this out of love. I understand that. They do it out of love because that's the way they know how to succeed based on where they're from. So if, you know, my parents are from China, the way to succeed in China, you need to get a good education. If you don't have that, you will not get ahead. I swear, you will not get ahead. Right. But we're in America and the system is different here. If you're able to provide value to people, you're able to earn money. Right. So, and also just remember, at the end of your life, I mean, I read these stories about people who are on their deathbed and their top five regrets is the peer pressure, succumbing to the peer pressure of what other people think will make you happy. And I remind myself of that. I only have one life to live. I'm not here to please my parents because my parents have their life. What right do they have to tell me what to do? They already have their own life to live. They want to live their life a certain way. They can live it. But my life is my own, right? So I wish other people understand this. It's very difficult, though. But once you get to this stage, you'll have a lot more confidence.
Thank you so much for listening. For a limited time, get a 10% discount and free shipping on a signed paperback copy of the 5-Day Job Search when you order on anyangfinancial.com, and that link will be in the show notes. Be sure to catch next week's episode where we talk more about financial freedom with Wally Miller. All original music produced by Stubborn Saul. You can find him at STBRNSAL.